Today's daf in Masechet Eruv Din, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Pei Gimel, and we're holding right at that last line of daf Pei Beit Amud Beit, Chetzia LeBayit HaMenuka, VeChetzi Chetzia LeFsolat HaGviya. So if you remember, we had four different shitot about exactly how we should measure the shear of the Eruv, and at the end of the Mishnah, we had this big machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka and Rabbi Shimon about how to relate to a very specific, instead of saying whatever a person would eat with it, with his pot and so on, and the machlokas Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, whether one eats more on Shabbos or more b'chol, this was a question of how to define a very specific amount of bread that would be sufficient for the Erev. Now, that amount of bread, it turns out, we had the machlokas about how many of the of Beit Sim would be put out ultimately. It's not my problem, it's your problem. How many of these Beit Sim would be actually there for the particular way in which they were measuring, which we'll get to in detail in a moment. So the Mishnah said, once we establish that, then we can take half of that. That would be the shear of the D'oraisa, of how long a person would have to stay in a Bayit HaMenugah, and in order for him to be metame the begadim that he's wearing. Begadim, of course, includes rings, things like that. And half of that in order to eat enough food that was tame to make him puzzle for truma. Now, the next thing that we see in a Braita is that there seems to be yet one additional thing that can be traced back to that shear of how we define a kikar. So we started off with explaining the idea of a kikar. What exactly is a kikar? And that was Gufa, the machlokas that we started with over here, between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon. So it turned out that according to the way we came out in the end, let's start with Rabbi Yochanan. Remember that we had to change Rabbi Yochanan significantly in order to include in the ultimate price of the loaf the labor costs, the fuel costs, the overhead costs, and put in also the profit. And it turned out that then it was basically a quarter of a kav. That was the standard kikar. A quarter of a kav would be six beitzim. So what we're saying over here is that we can cut that down by a half, then that by a half, and now we're going to say there's yet another half of a half of a half. In other words, an eighth. Rabbi Shimon, he came out with a shear of a third of a kav. So according to him, we basically started off with eight beitzim, and then we'd be going down by an eighth and an eighth and an eighth. We go down, a half and a half and a half, bringing us to an eighth. According to that, we'd be down to one beitzah, because there are eight beitzim and a third of a kav. So now the Braita is saying, if you take an eighth, chetzia, that would also be a very important shear, so that all of our shiurim of food can ultimately be traced back to the kikar as it's defined differently by Rabbi Yochanan and by Rabbi Shimon, because we would take not only half of it for the din of Bayit HaMenugah, and not only half of that for the din of Tumas Gviya, but also a half of that, which is a half of a half of a half, for being metame tumas ochlin. Now, we know perfectly well that all over, the shear for the tame tumas ochlin is the shear of one beitzah. Because of this, most of the Rishonim don't like Rashi's pshat, who says that this is actually part of the machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon, because we never find any shita that would follow the shita of anything but one beitza. And one beitza is an eighth of the kikar of Rabbi Shimon, and not of Rabbi Yochanan. So whether we're only referring here to the shear of Rabbi Shimon, or whether for some reason the din of Tumas Ochlin, Rabbi Yochanan was also Meida, Lamaitse, we do not find a machlokas, according to other Rishonim, about how much is metame Tumas Ochlin. We say metame Tumas Ochlin, it's enough food to be metame other food. Now, this is strange because the Mishnah, of course, went out of its way to utilize the shear for the Eruv as being a very fundamental shear out of which we can learn all of these other things. So why in the world would the Tana of our Mishnah not mention yet another thing that is part of the shear. So tani dinam mai tami lo tani tumat ochlin. It certainly makes a lot of sense to just get everything in there so we can understand that we keep going down by one half. So that would be great. Says the Gemara, well, it's because, in fact, it doesn't work out precisely. And that is that the din of tumas ochlin isn't really exactly a half of a half of the half. Why is that? Because take a look at the Braita. The Braita says, what is the shear of the chatzi pras that we spoke about? So remember, the pras is basically the essential din of that half of a kika. So what is that din of the chatzi pras? And that would be for the Braita, for the tumas gviya. It would be two beitzim, but they would be missing a tiny bit. Choser kim'a. So in other words, what we've been talking about all along was the two beitzim. That would be, remember, the question about what kind of beitzim. So the same way that we have, remember, by an ama, we have the ama, which is sochek, meaning that it's like laughing. So it's further, the tfachim are further apart from each other. And then we have the ama, which is basically very tight. And if it's very tight, then it would be a smaller ama. So the same thing is true that we have in all of our shiurim, including the beitzim. We have beitzim that are sochakot. So that means they're measured very loosely. And they're not the median egg, but slightly larger. And then there's also the smaller egg or the median egg. And that leads to a bit of confusion. Because the real amount that we would need for the chatzi pras is shtei beitzim, but slightly less, because we measure it in terms of tight eggs. So it's less than the median egg, which is in the middle. So says Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi says, on the contrary, it's shtei beitzim that are sochakot. They're actually larger than the median egg. And actually, Rebbe, he went and was Meshayer. Shi'er Rebbe Shtei Beitzim Va'od. So Rebbe actually went out to measure, and we'll see that what he did was he measured the sa'ah that people were using, and he measured it against the eggs that he had in his time. And he found that actually the sa'ah, and obviously if the sa'ah is different, then the kav is also different, that it actually had more than the standard small beitza than it was supposed to have. And that was supposed to be 144 beitzim, as it was, as we'll see, as originally established in the Midbar, or for the Kav, it would be 24 beitzim. And that's how we came out with our shiurim with Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and Rabbi Shimon. And he measured it, and it turned out that it was actually was more, and we'll see that it was more by 1/20. It was more apparently because, at least this is the way the Marshal learns, apparently because they were utilizing the Beitzim Sochakot, so that it would be an additional 1/20 of the volume is what it is that you should measure. And because of that, he found that it should be slightly more. And how much is more? Echad mi'asrim be'beitza. So that means that 1/20 of the egg is what you need to add per egg, which means that in the chatzi pras, you would actually have 2 1/10 of the beitzim. Now, since that's true, it turns out that none of the shiurim, this is the amount that we need for the chatzi pras, none of the shiurim that are given for tumas ochlin fit that. Because ilu gabi tumas ochlin, the Braita says, that Rabbi Nosson and Rabbi Doisa say that the amount that you need for the shear of the beitza, that is metame ochlin, is the standard beitza in its egg. And the Chachomim say it's the standard beitza without its egg, which means that if you're going to...
Shell.
What did I say? Sorry, standard egg without a shell, sorry. So if you compare, that means if you compare the din of tumas ochlin that we're talking about over here with the chatzi pras that we talked about before, then it's not the same at all. Because the way that Rabbi Dosa and Rabbi Nosson are measuring over here, the egg is certainly not exactly half of that chatzi pras. That's not 1/8 of the original kicker, no matter how you look at it. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, we would be saying that the Chatzi Pras is smaller than the standard egg. And according to Rabbi Yossi, it was supposed to be somewhat bigger because it was so chakot. And yet, according to the two shitas that we have over here, Aloha Lamaisa, in being Metame to Masochlin, it is exactly the standard egg. The only question is whether you're supposed to use the shell or not. But that is certainly not the same as the either the Beitzim Psochakot or the smaller Beitzim. Omer Afram Bar Papa Omer Chista, look, Zu Divrei Rav Yehuda Rav Yossi. The price that we said about how much is a Chatzi Prat, that is basically the Shiurim that we said about Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi in the Braita. That basically, that's two beitzim. The only question is how to define exactly those two beitzim. But the Chachomim say that keveitza umechza sochakot. The Chatzi Pras is that it's supposed to be 1.5 sochakot, larger eggs, not the standard egg. And obviously, that only works out according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Because according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, if you're using his measurements, so then you come out with 1.5. Because remember, according to Rav Yochanan ben Broka, the way that we worked it out, a standard kikar is a quarter of a kaf, which is shisha beitzim. And therefore, the normal pras, which is half of that, is 3 beitzim. And half of that is 1.5 beitzim. And that's obvious, because everybody until now has been talking only on Libra de Rabbi Shimon. Says, well, obviously, I mean, I stand. I know how to read the Mishnah. I know how to divide. If I divide into a half, and then divide by half again, and then divide by half again, and I come up with 1.5. What, am I stupid that he needs to tell me that? Ah, but you didn't know. So Chakot, did you? No. You had no idea whether Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka was talking about median eggs or whether he was talking about the bigger egg. That was the Chiddush. That's all he wanted to come along, Rav Fram, was to tell me that Aliba, the Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, you should know that it's 1.5 larger eggs. Okay, now it happened, the Maisa with Rebbe. We said that Rebbe measured a saw, and he found that it was very different than our saw. Obviously, it's necessary for us to know in order to explain the following crazy story. Because when Rav Dimi came to Bavel, he said that in Eretz Yisrael, this guy Bonias once sent Rebbe a kundas, which is a saw, and it was a saw that they had made, they manufactured this measurement for a saw in the town of Neusa. Rebbe measured it, and it came out insanely to 217 eggs. Now, how is that possible? Ask the Gemara, where in the world would you get a saw that measures 217 eggs? I mean, what type of saw are we talking about, first of all? Now, let's remember, as we've spoken about many times, that there were two changes in the measurements system where they added, at each time, they added a shtus. And a shtus, remember, is 1/5 after the addition is made, which ends up to being 1/6 extra. So in other words, they added an additional 20% to the original value. So from the time in the Midbar, we added to the measurements, which were called the Yerushalmiot. And then later on, the same thing was done again to the new measure to make up for deflation. And that was called the Tzipori measure. Now, explain to me where in the heck we come out with 217 eggs. If it was talking about the normal saw, that was the saw of the Midbar, then we know that that was Mea Arbaim Ve'Arba Havya. That was 144, and we're going to see all about that in terms of the way that the Torah tells us the standard Achila, which is measured by the man. So it turned out that, remember that the saw is 6 kav, each kav is 4 lug, each lug is 6 beitzim, which would mean that we have 144 beitzim in this sa'a. So 144 of those beitzim then is nowhere near 217. I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all. If you want to say, okay, maybe it was the next sa'a in which they added 20%, and that was the kind that is called the sa'a Yerushalmit. So let's figure out how much the Yerushalmit. The Yerushalmi, they added 20%. Okay, so then take a fifth of the 144, and that equals 28 4/5, right? 28.8. So if you add that to the 144, you end up with 172 4/5, which is a little bit disturbing, 172. So we'll just sort of round it up, right? 173. Forget about the 4/5. So then that means you get nowhere near to 217, even if you talk about the new measurement, which is 20% larger than the old measurement. Okay, fine. So it wasn't the Yerushalmi vision. Was it perhaps the Tzipori? Okay, let's multiply the Yerushalmi by 20%, right? And then we'll see whether that works out. So we started off with 173. We have to take an additional 20% of that. And that gives us basically 207, if we add it to the 173, approximately. Now, we ought to add a little bit more, but Lamaisa, we had already added more when we changed 172 4/5 of the Yerushalmi, and we made it 173. So Rashi says, because of that, if you analyze the additional amount that we should have added when we multiplied by 1/5, it ends up to being less than a half. Because of that, we measure downwards. So we don't add anything to that. So therefore, even if it was Tzipori, it's still not 217. It still comes out to 207. So I don't get it. Where do you get 217? There's no possible Sa'a that could have measured 217 eggs. Well, says the Gemara, if we take the Tzipori one, right, and we say that what this was, add, basically, this was a very frum Sa'a. So what it was made of is essentially a Sa'a plus the amount that you would need in order to take off challah, and that way you would know that you have the amount of beitzim, of usable flour that you would actually use. So it included also the extra challah. No. Because how much is the challah? Figure it out yourself, okay? The challah is only going to add another 8. Because, I'm assuming we're talking about a private person. That's the most we can do, right? So the balabayit. The balabayit, as opposed to the baker, is 1/24. Okay, so if you take 1/24, you end up with, add it to the 207, and you end up with 215. That still doesn't give you 217. So I don't get it. Where do you come up with 217? It doesn't answer it. Because it's only Tamani, Akati Batsale. It still doesn't add up. Okay. 1 second. I'll tell you. Now we can understand it if we take into consideration that, forget about this business of challah, it wasn't that frum of a sub. What happened over here is that Rebbe was adjusting for the new value of eggs that he saw as being 1/20 extra. That's the point. So in terms of the standard egg, you need to add for Rebbe, and that is how this whole thing works out. If Rebbe says, look, these eggs were obviously larger than the median egg. So if you're talking about the odot, ela'aite ve'odot, the Rebbe, shodi alei, take the extra amount of the eggs that Rebbe said need to be included in a saw, which was an additional 1/20. Add that to the 207, which is the Tzipori standard, and then you're going to end up with 217, which is exactly to what they sent Rebbe, and they asked him, does this fit what it is that you need? So because of that, you've got 217. Now, the truth is, it isn't really that, because all we did was we took the additional amount really of only 200 of them. We didn't take the 200. We didn't take the 7, right? We took 200, which added us, in terms of taking the 1/20, added us 10. So we added 10 to the 207, which is 217. But that was cheating a little bit, because we didn't take the 20th of the extra 7, right? So how does that work out? So again, it works out because it doesn't actually make the difference of the full egg, right? It comes out to 91/125 if you do it with fractions. So again, it's the same terets Rashi gave earlier. As long as it doesn't go beyond the half, we just keep it rounded down. Okay. So rounded down, it makes sense perfectly. So wait a second. So then that would mean that Ihochi Havi Leitfei. I mean, remember that we left out, like, if you're going to add that, then it turns out that the tzipori, the normal sah, should be more slightly, which is pointing out what we just said. We didn't take into account the extra seven. Yes, true, but it's not a full beit, says Rashi, but it's even less than a half. It's not a full beit sah because we don't worry about it. Okay, so this is good enough. Now, Tana Rabbanan, how did this whole start? It started with the Sa'ah Yerushalmit, which added 1/6, which again means 1/6 of the total, which is 1/5 of the original, on the Midbarit by Ashtod. Then it was added to an Etziporit, which went beyond the Yerushalmit, again by 1/5 of the Yerushalmit, which is a sixth. And that means, now here's where we get into trouble. This sounds like somebody's doing some very poor math. That means that the Tziporit is greater than the Midbarit by a third. Now that's ridiculous. You can't add a sixth and another sixth and make it a third because they were of different amounts, right? I mean, so what is that supposed to mean? How could you say that when they added a sixth of Yerushalmis, which was a sixth of 144, and then they added a sixth of to the Tziporis, that then that turns out to work out one third more than the Midbaris? Come on. Something's wrong with that, right? So ask the Gemara, okay, obviously it doesn't mean what it seems to be saying, but what is it measuring? It's greater than the Midbaris by a third of what? By a third of the Midbaris? Is that what you mean? Ilay mashlish de Midbaris? Well, do the math, okay? Mirte, how much would a shlish of the Midbarit be? Okay, 48 eggs, all right? 48 eggs, 144 divided by 3. Okay, add that now. The difference between the Tzipori over the Midbari is how much in the end? 63. I don't understand how 48 got to be 63. So it can't mean that it's a third larger than the Midbaris. Okay, so that's out of the question. Maybe it means it's a third larger than the Yerushalmis, right? That's what it means. In other words, the third, it's greater than the Midbaris by a third. By which third? A third of the Yerushalmis. Okay, let's see. Let's see. So how much is the third of the Yerushalmi? Is 57 2/3, right? So it's basically 58 minus 1/3. But here we're talking about 63. 58 is not 63. Okay, so maybe it means the Tzipori is 1/3 of its own measurement larger than the Midbaris, right? Maybe that's what it means. Doesn't work out either. Because how much is 1/3 of the Tzipori? 69. And the reality is that the difference is 63. So that doesn't work either. So the statement just seems to be ridiculous. Ela Amra Birmiya, the only way to work this out is like this. That what the Braisa was saying was that Nimtzei Tza'a Shal Tzipori Yetera Amidborit Karov L'Shlishela. It's close to a third of itself larger because basically the difference between 63 extra, 69 extra. And that would mean that Shlishela, 1/3 of it is close to 1/2 of the entire Sa'ah Midbarit, because 1/3 of the Tzipori is 69, and 1/2 of the Midbari is 72, half of the 144. And it's just pointing out that you get close to the original measurements. Matkifla Ravini, what is all of this? Come off it, man. What does it say anything about Karov over here? You're changing the whole thing. He was coming to tell you some type of, you know, it's interesting that there's some fascinating interrelationships about similarities between the thirds and the halves. What does it say anything about that? Show me one place it says anything about Karov. I don't understand. I mean, this you're calling Karov, 69, 63. I mean, it's like, what would be the point of saying such a thing? I don't believe it. Elam Ravina, I'll tell you, we can make sense out of the Braita if we say it's saying like this, that if the third of the Tzipori, added to which you would put in the additional 1/20th of the Odiot Shel Rebbe, so then what it is, it turns out to be larger, Yitera, on half of the Midborit, by a third of an egg, not by a third of the total, by a shlish beitzah. That's what he was trying to say. Because if you add the 1/20th, which that meant that you have now 217, like we said before, when Rebbe measured this saw that came to him from this town, so then 1/3 of that would be 72 1/3. And half of the midboris is 72. So fine, 72 1/3, we round off to 72. So it turns out that it's actually, the only difference is 1/3, correct? 72 1/3 is 1/3 of a beitza, which similar to the 72, within 1/3 of a beitza. Nothing to 1/3 of the measurement. Whew, okay, maybe, but at least that way it actually works out. Now, where does all of this come from? Okay, let's go to the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Reshit ariso techem chala tarimu truma. Okay, so it makes a measurement of the standard arisa. So that standard arisa is basically what everything is going to be based on, and where it is that you take off the amounts that you need for challah, and so on and so forth. So what that means to say, why does it say arisotechem? Why not just say arisa, isa? So that means kidei isotechem, that if what you're going to be taking off is always like your current dough. What's your current dough is defined by the man. Kama isotechem kidei isata midbar. It's not referring to whatever you happen to be making. It's referring to a particular dough, arisotechem, your dough, the one that was given to you in the midbar. So now let's figure out how large was the dough that they made from the man in the midbar. Well, we know that it says that the omer, which was the man that was given to each person, is 1/10 of an epha. An epha is 3 sa'a. And we know that, remember we had that whole analysis of the Pasuk in Yecheskel, where we went through this whole thing in Menaches. So it turned out that the Omer, which is Asiris ha'epha, and if the epha is 3 sa'a, so then that means the Omer in the Isas ha'midbar was 3/10 of a sa'a, because we're saying it's that Asiris ha'epha. So it's an Asiris of these 3 sa'a. 1/10, that's 3/10 of the sa'a. Okay. Now, it's from that they come out with, Mikan Amru, from here it turns out that Shiv'a Riva'im Kemach, the Ode, a little bit more than 7/4 of a kav, plus a little bit more, which is another 1 1/5 eggs, as we've seen many, many times, is going to be chayev in challah. And then when we replace the measurements with the Yerushalmi measurements, it works out very nicely, because that equals 6 Yerushalmi rovas, because what we added was exactly 20%. So if the Yerushalmi was 1 1/5 rova, 6, that means of the, what were previously the rova of the, one rova is 6 beitzim. So 6 now equals the 7 1/2. So it works out beautifully, because we added an additional 1/5. So it really worked out well when we went ahead and we did the Yerushalmi. And then by changing that with exactly 20%, it works out very well too, because then 5 equals 6, because 5 now has 1 1/5, because it's an additional 1/5. And that means that 5 Tzipori equal 6 Yerushalmi, which equals 7 1/5 of the Midbar. Mikan Amru, and that's the basis of the fact that we said, Ha'ochel kimida zo, if you want to learn how to eat healthily, then follow the man. If that's how much you eat, then you're a smart guy, eating healthily, and areze bari umevorach. If you eat more than that, then you're a slob. you're a Rav Tan, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu supplied you with exactly what you need in the Midbar, and you think you need more. If you eat less than that, then you've got bad digestion. You should not be satisfied with less than that. Pachot mikan, mekukal b'me'av. Okay. Anyway, this gives us the interrelationships of the various shiurim as we find them b'nogea eruvin. And now moving on with our kapitan, who will introduce the next Mishnah. We'll finally get back to the Iker Dinim of Eruvin. Whew. Okay, so you will remember that we discussed earlier the case of Anshe Chotzer ve'Anshe Mirpeset. So we have over here people that are living on a ground floor, people that are living on a second story that opens onto a porch. We talked about, I think somebody actually uploaded, I think it was Nachi, had uploaded a picture for Bote Ungarin, so you could see an actual case of a chotzer that is like that. And if they forgot to make an Erev between them, so shachu v'lo irvu, so now we've got a problem because the people that are coming off of the Merpeset are going to be going through the chotzer in order to get out, and then they are not able to carry in an area that they share any rights to, right? So now, what would be the din of areas that are lifted above the ground level? So now they're in between the ground level and the people on the Merpeset's level. So then the deal is like this. Anything that is 10 tfachim, and this is all part of the halachas of what happens to the top of a wall between two chatzeras, where they both have equal access to that wall. They did not make an Erev between them. Maybe they couldn't have made an Erev between them. You're not allowed to move it at all. And then we got into all of the issues. Okay, what if one side of the wall adds a ladder or puts up shelving, or makes it closer to them? And that led into questions of the next Mishnah after that, which was if you've got a ditch between two chatzeras. And again, there too was the question, if one is ground level with the ditch or closer than 10 to the ditch, one is further than the ditch. So over there we introduced a concept which is called noach, that the tashmish being noach is the one that we give it to. The tashmish that is bedochak, we do not give it to. So even if you do not have an Erev, we will assign it to the sole usage of the chatzer, which has an easier gisha to using it. Now we want to see in the Mishnah the various interrelationships between those different rishuyot. So anything that is 10 tvachim high and up, that goes to the people living in the higher rishos. Anything that is lower than 10 tvachim, that goes to the people in the chatzer. So in other words, even if we don't have an Erev between it, it's given over by the Chachomim to the usage of those to whom it is easier to use. So let's take a look at an example. Two examples, which is a bit confusing because they seem to be very different. Chuliyat habor v'hasela, which are gevoim asarat fachim lemirpeset, pachot mikan l'chatzer. Now the sela is obvious. The sela is just like a rock. The rock, as an example, makes a great deal of sense. It's 10 tvachim high, then it goes to the ones that are on above, and a little bit less than that, it goes to the chatzer. That's just restating what it said in the beginning. But the thing about the chuliyat habor is a little bit confusing, because remember that the chuliyat habor refers to I don't know what you would call it, a little wall that you build around the bar that is usually built from whatever you took out of the bar, and you form it into a little wall around the bar. So then the halacha is, remember, that we combine bar v'chulyato so that you can have asara, even though this thing is only sticking out a little bit above the ground. So I'm not sure how that works out over here. If you want to talk about the chuliyat habor itself being 10 tefachim above, well, I understand that, but then it seems to be the same thing as the rock, right? Unless you're talking about drawing out of the bar. Now, that definitely confuses things, because then what would be the din of the people in the Mirpeset, well, the contents of the bor would be lower than the 10 tefachim within their reach. So doesn't that compromise the rule? That's what we have to see. So if it's less than 10, then if it's higher than 10, then it goes to Mirpeset. If it's less than 10, it goes to the Chatzar. Bameh dvarim amurim, when is this true? Only when it's close enough to the Mirpeset for people to be able to reach. But if it's very far away, then even if it is 10 tefachim high, it's still easier for the people in the Chatzar to reach it because they can walk there than for the Mirpeset people to use some kind of a clamp or something to get the stuff. What do we mean when we say it's close? Ezoi smucha? It means that it's not four tefachim away. Because remember, four tefachim is already considered to be a different area. Okay, so let's try to just sum up what we know. So first, here's what we know. Pshita. It's clear. Now let's just get our terminology correct. The word petach that we're about to use does not mean a petach. It means it's open. Open to use. So open to use means it's noach, wherever it's open to. So if it's lezeh bepetach velezeh bepetach, so then each one of them, it's accessible through a petach, essentially, means it's easily accessible, then that is exactly the case that we had before. Remember, we had it before, if you have a window that is between the two chatzeros, and we said that since that is accessible to both, so then it should be usher to both, right? So if we said, unless you have an Eruv, you can't even move it. Okay, then that would be the din if it's easy. Now, another term we're going to introduce, zrika. Zrika does not literally mean zrika. Zrika means you've got to stretch up. So if you have to stretch up, so then if it's both of them, to both chatzeros, it's accessible only bizrika, meaning moving your hand up, then that's the same as the wall between two chatzeros. It's higher than the window, but both chatzeros are shalit on it. We had the Mishnah before that said beferish. Nobody can use it because it's equally accessible to two chatzeros without an Eruv. Now let's introduce our third term. The third term is a stretch, downward. The word that we use for it is shilshul, which is lowering an object, usually with a rope. Again, it's a borrowed term. Petach is a borrowed term. Zrik is a borrowed term. Shilshul is a borrowed term, and it's a legal term that we're going to use throughout this sugya. So let's say we have an area that is accessible on both sides. Let's say we've got a pit between the two chatzeros, and it's accessible to the others only by shilshul. Well, it's also a Mishnah. We had the Mishnah about a charitz, shebein shtei chatzerot, and we said it's the same thing as a wall between two chatzerot. It's equally accessible, and therefore it's usher to both. Okay, now, let's talk about cases that are more complex. So to one area, it's got a petach. Again, a petach means it's easy to use. So it has a portal, so to speak, to use it. Doesn't mean there's any real petach there. So lezeh bepetach velezeh bezrika. Okay, that would be the case that we also discussed before. We talked about a case where we had the top of one wall that was 10 tefachim above one chatzar, but was even or less than 10 tefachim. We used even, but didn't mean even. Less than 10 tefachim to the other chatzar. So remember, Rabba Bar Avuna says, give it to the people to whom it's easier to use. Okay, then that would be the case over here, because the people that are easier to use, they have, so to speak, the petach, the opening to the usage. Good. How about if you've got one area that it has this portal, so it's easy to use. To the other one, you can only use it by shilshul, meaning by stretching downward. We had that case before also. That was the case of Rav Shizvi, Omer Reb Nachman, where we had the ditch that was more than 10 tefachim to the upper chatzar, but was less than 10 tefachim or even to the lower chatzar. And he said, give it to the lower chatzar, because to them there's a petach, so to speak. So we know that also. Now, where I don't know, and which we've never determined, I can't remember any case like this, is where one of them has access by shilshul, and one of them has access by zrika. So in that case, Do we have a definition of which one is easier to use and therefore which one we would give it to? Or no? Omer Rav, it's even. And therefore they have equal access. And equal access means nobody's got anything. Very important issues today. But anyway, equal access means no access. So it's usher to everyone. Where Shmuel says, no, I think that the one that is able to bend down and use it is considered to be more noach tashmish than the guys that have to stretch to use it. And because of that, we will give it to them. Because basically, shalazet tashmisho binachat, the chotzer, which only has to bend, it's easier than to those that have to stretch, and that's called tashmisho bekasha. And remember that those were the simple terms that we had utilized before, and that was nachas and kasha. We've gotten a little bit more sophisticated in terms of what type of usage. I want to say, says Shmuel, that the new terms that we introduced can also be relatively nachas and kasha. Rav says there's no relative in these terms. Okay. V'chol davar shetashmisho, says Shmuel, wherever you have lezeh benachat, v'lezeh bekasha, of course we give it to the ones that are benachat. Now, this immediately raises some warning bells from the Mishnah. Why? Because the Mishnah said, if you've got people in a chatzar and people in the merpeset, and they forgot to make an Erev together, then if it's 10 tvachim high, it goes to the merpeset. If it's lower than that, it goes to the chatzar. Okay. Now, first, let me explain to you what I believe is the meaning of merpeset. Because what I thought was meant by merpeset is that these are people who live in the second story. And that basically what you have is not that you climb all the way up to the second story by getting onto a merpeset that's right out their front door. What I assumed the meaning was, and I'll tell you very simply why I assumed the meaning was that, well, because 10 tefachim is not really high enough to be a normal home, right? So, I mean, I assumed that what's going on over here was that the bottom story is higher really than the floor of the merpeset. It's just that the merpeset was, let's say, a half a story up. And then from the merpeset, you had like stairs that were going down from everyone's home onto the merpeset. And that's what I thought it meant. So it's really a second floor. Okay. And because the only reason we call it a merpeset is because the way that you get into your second story home is by first going onto the merpeset and then coming to your door where there's an additional stairwell. But I mean, if that's true, then that means that we've got a case over here that the people in the second story, in order to utilize it, are going to have to be mishal shel, right? It's not going to be within 10. So amakol lezeh b'shulshul, v'lezeh b'zrika notinotno lezeh b'shulshul. The people in the second story are going to be way above something that is only 10 tefachim high. And they're going to have to use it by lowering something, so to speak, bending all the way down to get to it. And the people in the chotzer are only going to have to stretch upwards. And yet it seems to be saying exactly what Shmuel says and exactly what Rav didn't say. Namely, that we will give it, it says in the Mishnah, we will give it to the people on the second story. So that seems to be very clearly Shmuel. No. I mean, the idea of merpeset we're going to see is actually, later on we're going to see, like Rav Huna says, it means people are actually living on the level of the merpeset. That's what it means over here in the Mishnah too. People who live on the level of the merpeset, so for them, it's basically a real petach. And therefore it would be true according to Rav. Petach meaning a portal for usage. It's an opening. So one requires zrika, and the other one has direct access. No, I can't mean that. Because, look, take a look at the Seifa. The Seifa, you say the Mishnah is not talking about a second story. But then it says, pachot mikan l'chotzer. Why? Explain to me, why pachot mikan l'chotzer? If the halacha is talking about that they were talking about a mirpeset that apparently is within 10 tefachim, even if it's less than tefachim, 10 tefachim high, then isn't it shilshul to one, but within 10 tefachim? That's called petach. It's not zrika to the other, it's within 10 tefachim. So wouldn't it be within 10 tefachim to both of them? Says the Gemara, well, yes, you're right. I mean, the way I understood it originally, those people were very high. Now you're saying, no, those people are really not high. There's merpeset, there's a low merpeset. So then why, if that's the case, if they both have a petach, why is it mutter for the b'nei ha-chatzer? No, you know what it meant when it said l'chatzer? It meant, since it's within 10 of the chatzer, it also goes to the chatzer. And therefore, if it also goes to the chatzer, then both of them are aser. Whew. I didn't think that's what it meant. No, that's even mistaber to say that. Because take a look at the end of the Mishnah where it says, Bamed varmamun bismucha. It's only where it's close to the merpeset. But if it's far away from the merpeset, then even if it's 10 tefachim high, it goes to the chatzer. Now, what do you think it means over there? It goes to the chatzer. Why does it go to the chatzer? It goes to the chatzer and it's mutter? Why would it be mutter? I don't understand. They're both equally problematic, no? I mean, it's just as hard to get to it from the merpeset by stretching as it is over here to stretch up to get to the 10 tefachim. So I don't understand. If it says it goes to the chatzer, then that's a contradiction to our general rule, right? So when you're saying if it's muflag, it goes to the chatzer, what you really meant was it's just as bad to the chatzer, meaning that both of them are aser. Exactly. That's exactly what Rav said it meant before. So hachinami, when we say it's the chatzer, we mean it's also to the chatzer, which means that both of them are aser, and dafka, that would be perfectly correct according to Rav in the first part of the Mishnah. Okay, that's amazing. So that means we have absolutely no raya yet from anywhere about what the din is, one b'shilshul and one b'zrika. Okay? Let's take a look at the next part of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if you have the chuliyat habor, which we pointed out is a little confusing because the chuliyat habor seems to be saying you could stretch down and use the things that are inside the bor. That's if the chuliyat habor or a sela, which are gavoa asara lemirpeset, and if it's less than asara to the chatzer, and then that would mean that what we have over here, assuming that we're talking about the second story thing, then we have, this is where Rav Huna said what he said, and Rav Huna, then it would be the same raya, the second story is b'shilshul, and then it would be like Shmuel, and Rav Huna said here, and this is the Rav Huna we used before, doesn't mean people living in the second floor, means people living on the level of the merpeset. So now here's my problem. The sela, I understand, because the sela makes perfectly good sense. If it's 10 tefachim high, then it's within 10 tefachim of the people who live on the merpeset. But what are you going to say about the bor? What is the meaning of the chuliyat habor? Because what are you going to say over there when I'm assuming that what you mean is that you can even go to the bottom of the bor? The bottom of the bor is for sure 10 tefachim below the merpeset. So, I mean, and if you're just talking about the chuliyat habor, then you're not saying anything intelligent because you already said sela. So, apparently, Shmuel is right. To the people on the top, all you have to do is go down. So that's closer. Omer Rav Yitzchak Bar Rav Yehuda, well, maybe we're talking about a bor that's full of water all the way to the top. So it doesn't mean that you're going to go down. What do you mean, all the way to the top? It's all the way to the top before the people start using it. What's the matter with you? Once you start using it, it's not going to be all the way to the top anymore. Yeah, okay, but still, at the beginning of Shabbos, it was all the way to the top. So we define it the way it was at the beginning of Shabbos, right? So given the Chimalya Sharia, Kikasunami Sharia, it's on the contrary. When we were talking about all of the cases of accessibility on the walls and so on, remember we were talking about putting a ladder? We said, well, it can't be the kind of ladder that you would move on Shabbos, because then that wouldn't be definitive. Excuse me. If you're going to be drawing the water, then you're going to be drawing the water on Shabbos. That's worse than the ladder that somebody might move over here. The whole point is to draw the water, to be able to draw the water. So for sure it's going to be too far away. So why are we being moderate just because it was okay at the beginning? Adarabba. We could say that since, if it's chaser, it's going to be usher. It should be usher right at the beginning. That can't be the answer. Okay, I got another answer. Who said we're talking about water? Maybe we're talking about a boar that's holding apples. Yeah. And how does that help you? So it's talking about apples. All right. So now when I start taking out the apples, they go down. Just like water, believe it or not. Apples go down the way water goes down. No, but with the apples, I can make it that they don't go down. Because we could be talking about apples that are tevel. So it's muktza. So then what we're talking about is that you're going to be using the top of this whole thing. And that makes sense that it starts ignoring the issue of taking things out of the bor, because that's why it puts it together with a sela. Oh, man. I mean, if it puts it together with a sela, couldn't you just be happy with the sela? Well, I mean, what did you think you were adding by talking about a bor and a chulia? If you were only talking about lifting off of the top of the chulia, then for all intents and purposes, you're talking about a sela. So what did you add? You didn't add anything. I mean, if you were talking about the inside of the bor, now that would be an intelligent addition. But if you're talking about using only the top, why mention it? No, I need to mention it. Because if I would have just told you the sela, I would say, okay, yeah, why not? It's 10 tefachim from here, and what's the 10 tefachim from there? But if we were talking about a bor, so then I would think, you know what? That's not a good idea to be matir. Because we should make a gzeira. What if we're talking about in a case where we have things that could be drawn out of the bor? Then maybe we should answer always the bor, because people won't only use the top of it. They'll use the inside. So therefore, I need to say it. Okay, but meanwhile, we have no raya to Rav or Shmuel about whether there's a relative meaning to Shilshul and Zrika, or whether there's only an equivalent of not Benachas. Toshma. Let's take a look at this b'raisa. Okay, the Anshei Chotzer, the Anshei Aliyah forgot to make an Erev. The Anshei Chotzer use the lower 10 tefachim of the wall. Lower 10 tefachim of a wall? How do you use 10 tefachim of a wall? Well, it's going to turn out that there's shelves on the wall. So, there was a shelf on the wall. If it was within 10 tefachim, the lower people use it. The Anshei Aliyah use a shelf on the upper 10 tefachim. Aren't we talking about a vertical wall? No, we're talking about a ledge, obviously. A ziz, yotzei min hakotel. So if that ziz is beneath 10 tefachim, then it goes to the chatzar. If it's above 10 tefachim, then it goes to the aliyah, right? Okay, now let me ask you something. What about the area in between? What about the area between 10 tefachim close to the chatzar and 10 tefachim close to the people on the second story? And now we've got all of that space in between. The mashma'ut is that that is considered to be joint area, not usable by either. Ha-ha-ha. The only thing that we're allowing you is the ones that can use it b'shilshul or to the ones that can use it b'zrika. But if it's something that could be used by one group, b'shilshul, and the other group, b'zrika, you can't use it at all, correct? Okay? So then if that's the case, none of this works. Wait, am I going too far? I think I'm going too far for you, right? I got carried away. Wait, we were only supposed to do... yikes.
Actually, I have to dust my
head. Oh, gosh, I'm so sorry.
Nobody wanted to stop
repping. No, I'm sorry. I was having so much fun.
I'm not here tomorrow, so I'm very happy. We're going to be able to hold a week, 7 black, we'll be fine.
I'm so embarrassed.
You were on a roll. No. Let's finish the Masechet Bo.
I'm so sorry. I'm crazy. Here I'm thinking, gosh, why is this going on so long? I said to myself before I started, I'm for sure going to finish in a half an hour tonight. I'm looking at the clock. Gosh, why is it taking so long? Oh, my God. I just went on to Manalas. I'm sorry. Okay. We'll go over it again then tomorrow. But can I just finish up this pshat, though? Because, I mean, look, I mean, it's such a nice raya, right? Because the people in the middle, it's equal one b'shilshul, one b'zrika. And it's saying that nobody can use it. And that's exactly what Rav says. Nobody can use an area because there's no relative usage. That's the raya. Okay. Fine. The answer is obvious, right? Because if we're talking about that you don't have more than 20 tefachim from the top to the bottom, then we don't have a beini beini. Okay, but we'll go over this tomorrow.